We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning and welcome to Focus. This is our morning talk show. My name is David Inge, and we're very glad to have you with us. In this part of Focus 580, we'll be talking some about the activities and the interests of the folks at the East Central Illinois Refugee Mutual Assistance Center. It's based in Urbana. And as the name would sort of suggest, this is a place that aims at trying to help refugees, immigrants in our community get settled, no matter where it is that they come from. We'll try to talk a little bit this morning about some of the challenges that these newcomers face in making new homes and building new lives. Maybe we'll also try to talk a little bit about some of the ways that the center also tries to promote both cultural exchange and cultural preservation. And our guest for the program this morning is Deborah Halavna. She's the co-director of the center. And we're pleased that you could come and spend a little time with us. Questions, of course, are welcome. 333-9455 is the number for Champaign-Urbana. We have a toll-free line. That one's a good anywhere that you can hear us. That's 800-222-9455. And also, you may email your comments to will-talk@illinois.edu if you'd like to do it that way. In any way, of course, input from people who are listening is certainly welcome. The only thing we ask of people who are writing or calling is that they just try to be brief in their comments, and we just ask that so we can keep things moving along and get in as many people as possible. But certainly anybody who is interested in being in on the conversation is certainly welcome to do that. Well, thanks very much for being here.
Thank you.
How long has the center been in existence?
The center was incorporated in 1982, so it's 27 years, 28 mm-hmm. years. Mm-hmm. 28 years, because this is 2010.
Yeah.
It was formed by refugees during the time.
National Weather Service in Central Illinois. This is a test tornado warning. Repeat, this is a test tornado warning for all of Central, East Central, and Southeast Illinois. Repeat, this is a test tornado warning effective until 10:15 a.m. Central Standard Time this Tuesday morning for all of Central, East Central, and Southeast Illinois. This is a test message. This test tornado warning initiates the Severe Weather Preparedness Week tornado drill. Repeat, this is only a drill. This annual drill is part of Severe Weather Preparedness Week in Illinois. During this time, you are encouraged to practice your severe weather emergency plan. Repeating, this is a test message for all of Central, East Central, and Southeast Illinois. We now return to regular programming.
Bilingual even speaks a language called Turkmen, and I had never heard of it before, but it is part of the ethnic Turkish population. So there are some Turkmen in Iraq, they're in Turkey, of course, all around in that area of the country. So it is a very, very diverse population.
Mm-hmm. And to what extent is one of the major challenges folks face simply that they may come and they may not be very strong in English?
Okay. When most of them come, they do not speak English. And if you come as a refugee, you come in a little bit different status because those people have been designated as people who have a, quote-unquote, well-founded fear of death or persecution if they remain in their home countries or go back. So they're in a different category, and they have a little window of about 8 months from the time they hit the U.S. where they can study English. Mm-hmm. If you are someone who earned the DV lottery, which is a diversity lottery, or were sponsored by a family member to come, there is no window of opportunity. You've got to figure out how to do it, is really what it comes down to. You might be able to enroll in adult ed in the evening or Parkland's ESL classes for evening, or maybe in the morning if you're working normal shifts. But your main thing is to jump through the hoops of getting your Social Security card and getting employed, because your family is there to help support you, but they can't support you for very long. You have to find work. So it's not like, oh, well, I can go and study at my leisure. No. And even with the refugees, most of the time when they get here, we would like to see them stay in the ESL class for 6 months or so, because then you've got pretty good what I would call survival English. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get into a big abstract conversation, but you, if you're in the grocery store, you can ask where something is or check a bus route or something along that line, you know, to get from here to there. But their main thing is we've got to get employed. We have to take care of the family here. And unfortunately, for immigrants, there is also the call from the families that are left behind. And when they hear, oh, you're earning $8 an hour. Well, if you come from a culture where $8 for might be a week's pay, it sounds like a lot. But they have no concept of how much money that really is. Here, that's not very much money. It costs a lot more to live here than it did back in your home countries. So it's... we'd love to see them get more than survival English and move up, because, and certain immigrants, after they've been here a year or two, have figured out, you know, if I can do better in English, I can become a supervisor, or I can become a team leader, a little bit more pay. But it's something that they just don't give themselves very long to learn English. And it really comes down to, because there is no help for them other than a family member. And if you are a diversity lottery person, there's not even a family member. There might be a friend, but they've got to take care of their own family.
Mm-hmm. You know, Champaign-Urbana is a very cosmopolitan place because of the university. Mm-hmm. And we have people who come from all over the world who come here to study mm-hmm. and to teach. And so that's why I'm sure that people might have this expectation that there are a lot of people who come here, and that the reason they come here is that they have something to do with the university. And, you know, certainly there are a lot of people who do. But that makes me curious, for people who didn't come to Champaign-Urbana because of that reason, then you sort of wonder, well, why Champaign-Urbana? I mean, okay. Why is it they came here?
Okay. Well, with the refugees originally were sponsored by churches back in the 80s. Mm-hmm. Churches stood in the aspect of a family. And they would sponsor the boat people and other people who are fleeing civil wars. That, when you get a refugee, we'd like to see them stay at least a year, because by then they've gotten all their paperwork done. They've jumped through all the hoops. They've got their actual physical green card. And then if they want to stay in Champaign-Urbana or move on, that's fine. But usually by then they've got a job. They're moving on. Their family's here. The kids are enrolled in school. Things are doing better. Or it may be that the children are still coming, because if you come as a refugee, you have the right to bring the rest of your family, and that's immediate family. That's wife or husband and children, minor children. You have the right to bring them as refugees. So they've got to get established. For the other people who come, the other immigrants, when you get a refugee, if they achieve citizenship, they can sponsor their brothers and sisters, they can sponsor married children, and again, it's that family, somebody who knows what's what, who will be there for you, that kind of build the safety net. So the first group that came becomes the safety net. And then they all talk, everybody talks, and they say, you know, I've got a good job here, you can't find a job in XYZ state. You know, there are jobs out here. They don't insist that you have perfect English. People will translocate. They'll immigrate across the country, because their main thing is they have to take care of themselves. They have to take care of their families. The other thing is Champaign-Urbana is kind of a welcoming community. We're kind of laid back. The employers, as long as you do your job, everything is kind of, I mean, it's, we don't seem to be as worried as some communities.
We have as our guest in this part of Focus 580, Deborah Halavna. She is the executive the co-director. Yeah, we don't want to give you a promotion or anything.
That's right.
Not without increase in salary. She's the co-director of the East Central Illinois Refugee Mutual Assistance Center in Urbana, and we're talking about the immigrant populations here in East Central Illinois. Who some of the people are who come here, why they come here, some of the challenges, and then what the organization is all about, and some of the things that they do to try to help folks get settled. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455, and email will-talk@illinois.edu. Well, I got an off-the-air question here from somebody who didn't quite, maybe he came in just a little bit later or on your introductory comments, and was just interested, again, to hear a little bit about, about the makeup of the immigrant community in Champaign, Urbana.
It is very, very diverse. We have people from Iran, Iraq, India, Vietnam, Cambodia, Indonesia, Malaysia, Russia, Azerbaijan, Canada. You know, we've got some from France. We've got from Africa. We have Somali, Egyptians, people from Morocco, Democratic Republic of Congo, Cameroon, Sierra Leone, Liberia. I know some people. I met some people from Kenya. There are probably more that we don't know, because they tend to come to us when they have questions or problems, or family members bring them, or a friend who knows of us brings them, or sometimes they're referred by other organizations to us. So I'm sure there's a lot more. Then if you go into South America, Central America, Mexico, you can pretty much go right down and find. I don't think I know of anybody from Uruguay, but I've run into just about people from every other country. So and of course there is a large Korean population here in Champaign-Urbana. So, and Chinese. And I know Taiwan is now considered by China part of China, but then there's a large Taiwanese population. So you name it, we probably have Philippines. I really do believe that we probably could find somebody in the community or in the county from every country in the world. It's really amazing.
Well, I'm sure that I read somewhere not very long ago that Champaign County has the highest percentage of Asians in our population outside of the Chicago area.
Yeah.
And I would expect that maybe you could say some of the same sorts of things about, you know, multicultural influences, people from a lot of different places. And again, I suppose in part it goes back to the fact that the university is here.
Some of it's the university. Some of it was from the boat people. Some of it is that certain populations, if you're going to be a business person, they're going to spread out. If you stay in the big cities, you may not have as good a quality of life. And the other one is some people did not grow up in large, really large metropolitan areas and don't want to stay there. They would prefer to move out, come to a little more, still a city, but not as large a city, more opportunities.
Yeah. We have a caller here. Let's talk with them. Someone in Champaign, line number one. Hello.
Hello, this is Adriana from Champaign.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a question. I'm not sure if you can answer for me. I'm from Mexico, and I brought my grandmother here because she was having a lot of health problems. The place where she was living, unfortunately, in my country right now, is a lot of drug dealers, fighting, war, etc. My grandmother is 95 years old, having a hard time even crossing the street to go and buy her groceries. She was 77 pounds when she came to visit me. So we went to the doctor. They found a lot of problems with her. She had skin cancer. She had thyroid problems. Well, I keep her here. The problem is I try to keep her here with me, but even if I am legal, non-legal resident, I am a citizen now, I can keep her because she's not my mother, she's my grandmother. And I was trying everything I can. I even tried to say maybe a humanitarian visa, and I just found that humanitarian visa is just for 1 year. And I mean, 1 year is not enough. She's 95 years old, so obviously she's not coming to work. I'm planning to support her, my husband and I. So I don't know what else can I do other way. I have to return it to Mexico, and I'm really worried for her health. So I don't know if there's a way that the center can help me, or I just have to return her, you know, to see where she is coming from.
Unfortunately, with immigration laws, there's not a lot of give. You can talk to Tim Johnson's office, to Jennifer White, and maybe she can give you some options. The humanitarian visa is one. You can maybe apply for an extension of it.
Yes.
But the only person who could sponsor your grandmother would be your mother.
Yeah.
Or your father, whichever side she's on, because the laws are set up that there is no way to legally keep her here.
Oh, my God, yes, I know. My mother is in Mexico. My family is there.
Okay. Now, you could sponsor your mom or your,
yes.
you know, and bring them here.
Yes.
Then it's going to take a minimum of 5 years for them to become citizens.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, because then that's the, and then they would, which would put your grandmother at 102 or something.
Oh, my goodness.
Because it takes about a year to jump through all the paperwork to get an immediate relative, which would be your mom or dad, to get them here. Or your, you know, it is a hard decision to make, because the only things you can do is when her visa is up, you can apply for an extension and see if they'll give you an extension. And maybe you can make a good case. There is a group in Bloomington, Illinois called Immigration Project. Maybe they could help you write a good reason why your grandmother should not go back, and immigration might be decent and extend the visa.
No,
or you send her back, or just she entered lawfully and just keep her.
It's doctor there and everything, but nobody noticed her cancer. Nobody knows she has a thyroid problem or nothing.
Well,
like
it's
brother here.
It is. It's the same thing that happens in the U.S. You get people get their own busy lives, and they don't worry about the elders.
Yes, that's why I would worry about her, and I want to keep her with me.
Yeah.
I would
definitely, when the visa starts to get close to expiration, see about getting an extension.
Okay.
Because she's an elderly lady, and maybe you could just keep getting it extended until.
And try I can try that and just keep extending the visa while I can.
Yeah, because that way everything's, she's above board, and you don't have to make any other kind of decisions, but. You know,
I will have to take it to Mexico every 6 months and bring it back. That is also very hard for her.
Yeah, because at 95, traveling is very tiring.
Yes, it is. It is. Okay, thank you so much.
All right, well, thank you. Good luck. Our guest in this part of Focus 580 is Deborah Halovna. She's the co-director of the East Central Illinois Refugee Mutual Assistance Center in Urbana. They've been in business now for what we figured, 28 years, and we're talking a little bit about the activities of the center, also about some of the experiences of immigrants who come to Central Illinois, and some of the things that the center does to try to help folks. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana, toll-free 800-222-9455, and email will-talk@illinois.edu. I'm sure that there are all kinds of reasons that people come here, that to be a refugee is, that's a particularly special kind of status. And then once people are here, then they may also bring family members. And then, of course, there are people who come who actually come here because they have the promise of work. Maybe they're going to teach or maybe they're going to go to school. So the people come here, I'm sure, for all different sorts of reasons. Does that – and I wonder, you know, when you get people together who do come for all different sorts of reasons, do they see themselves as being really one community in a sense, even though maybe they may have come here for different reasons or, you know, they may be at different places in their lives?
I think so. And some of it is because the people that they will get together with to feel that bit of community will be probably people who are also native speakers. And so so in town, there's a Vietnamese association. There's a Chinese association. I know that there is one of the churches has a large congregation of the Congolese. They kind of support themselves. I know with the Liberians, they have kind of an informal network. So they get together and they talk about home. They share things that have worked for them, things that haven't, because that's part of what the center's object is, too, is mutual assistance, helping one another to help themselves. There's no need to reinvent the wheel. Our unofficial motto is have a problem, maybe we have a solution. But sometimes we have to answer honestly that there is no solution, just like for that lady. There is no, with immigration, there is no solution. I mean, there's no guarantee that when she files for the humanitarian visa extension that they will give it. And that, you know, that puts people in a hard place because this is their grandmother or this is their mom or this is their brother or sister. And that's a hard decision, truly is.
Yeah. Well, do you have people working with the center or maybe sort of associated with the center who have some expertise in immigration law so that they help people negotiate all this?
We will refer them to local lawyers, or there is a group in Bloomington, Illinois called Immigration Project, and they handle, they're a nonprofit, and they handle from I-80 South all the way down. They have clinics. They'll do citizenship clinics. They will answer questions if people are going to immigration court. They'll help them file paperwork. Most paperwork a person could do on their own. But if you have gotten in trouble where you're being called to immigration court, you really want to get a lawyer. Mm-hmm. I mean, a person could even file for asylum on their own. And many people do, and we have read some of this, read over the paperwork of some of the people who have prepared it, because the people are normally fairly educated. And once they understand the question, they can tell their story, and we may help them flesh out the story by saying, you say this happened, but what time of year did it happen? Because you need the story to read well. So you bring, but I can't tell your story, only you can tell your story. And some of the stories are very, very sad, because if you hope to get asylum, you really do have to prove that if you were returned to your home country, that bad things are going to happen to you. And immigration does not say, if you say, well, I know it's going to happen, that doesn't count. You have to prove it. So you may have to show, you may have to get documents from back home. You may have to show relatives have disappeared. I mean, it's not an easy process. Nothing about immigration is easy. It's kind of like citizenship. To get citizenship in the U.S., you have to be born here, marry a U.S. citizen, and you've got to be a legal permanent resident, marry a U.S. citizen, turn around after you've been married 3 years, you can apply for citizenship. If you came as a refugee or a sponsored immigrant, it's after 5 years you apply. You then, at the current rate, you then pay $675 per application. Study like mad. They do have a 100-question study guide and some words that you need to be able to write. The test is all done in your own, in English. You study like mad, and the questions are not easy. Many native-born people would have trouble answering them. Take the test. If you fail, you can come back and try one more time. And if you fail again, then it's another $675. And when you look at a family of five, that's a lot of money. And so a lot of people, we've had families in who just said, well, we sat and thought, we've decided this person is probably going to be more able to pass the test at this time than anybody else in the family. So they're going to take the test. And we'll save money, and maybe 2 or 3 years, will somebody else will. I mean, it's a hard thing. It's not easy. There's no easy path with immigration. There truly isn't.
We're just about at the midpoint of this part of Focus. We're going to take just a break here for just a moment because we need to do, as it is the first Tuesday of the month, we need to do this test of the EAS system. This is only a test.
Emergency Alert System. This system was developed to provide information to the public during emergencies. This was a test.
This is Focus. It's our morning talk show. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also happy to have you here on the program with us this morning as our guest, Deborah Halavna. She's the co-director of the East Central Illinois Refugee Mutual Assistance Center in Urbana. Questions, welcome, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455, and email will-talk@illinois.edu. I have a caller. We have some more callers coming in here. We got a caller up in the Geneva area on our toll-free line, line four. Hello.
Yeah, good morning, Dave. Mm-hmm. Good morning, guest. You know, I was wondering, are these refugees, do they kind of think, look at us funny for all the complaining that we do about our politicians? I do work with Lazarus House and some other groups with refugees, and they kind of laugh at, you know, having gone through hell and back, I guess, the ones that I work with, they look at us like, what are you complaining? I work with currently with some Iraqis and some Burundians. And, you know, they're kind of, they look at us like us Americans don't know how well we got it, as bad as it is, you know. And I'm just wondering, are they puzzled? Do they have a puzzled look on them from all this rant and raving we do, or do you get where I'm coming from?
Yeah, no, I don't really think they do. They, if you can get them to talk about it, they probably would assume that we don't appreciate what we have. But they are just so happy to be out of the problems that they experienced that they're very kind people. You know, they really are happy to be here. They are happy to start their lives. They are happy to move on. I was talking to a lady this morning who got word that her husband will probably be here within the next month. And she was just thrilled because she hasn't seen him in a year and a half. She was an Iraqi refugee. And, you know, she's just happy that she found a job, that she has an apartment, that the rest of her family will be here and they'll be safe. But they really, I think, do feel that sometimes we just don't appreciate what we have.
I know. I've got family in Europe, and they all say the same thing. Oh, we're crazy. We complain too much. And, you know, and it might be and somewhat true. You know, the older you get, the more value life means to you. I mean, when you're a kid, you don't care. You're kind of, I don't want to say brain dead, but, you know, even college students, I mean, you're just starting out in your life. You want to be, you know, the best you can be. But problem is you don't realize until certain things happen and you have family in other countries and how bad it really is. Still, as bad as it gets around here, we're still the best country in the world, far by none. And that's why everybody in the world wants to come here, to learn a trade, to learn, you know, something, or to give back to this country. And every person I know that is a true European that has come over here and to get nationalized for this country is always paid back. And I can't say enough for those refugees and other people that come over here. You know, God bless people like you. Keep up the good work, and I'll get off. Thanks.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll go on here. I think we have another caller here, someone local, I think, on our line number one. Hello. Go ahead.
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm from Rockford, Illinois.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, go ahead.
I had some comments about the immigration and citizenship and so forth.
Yes?
My wife finally got her citizenship, and she's from Mongolia. But the trouble we had to go through first for her permanent residency card, we had all kinds of questions of whether we own house together, whether we own furniture together, whether we own car together, whether we got loans and insurance together, mm-hmm. and all kinds of things like that. And they denied her permanent residency once, and then we had to get affidavits. And then on the citizenship test, she failed one, and they gave her trick questions. For example, one thing she was supposed to know was what was the name of the war between the North and the South. So they asked her, what was the name of the war between the East and the West? And so she answered the Civil War. And, of course, she failed that test. Then she went to take the test again. She studied for it real good, and they gave her a different test. And then she found out later that she had the choice of either the old test or the new test, but they didn't tell her that.
Yeah.
So she failed again and had to pay $600 and $75 or whatever it was. And then they wanted all this proof of ownership of insurance, loans, house, and so forth. She went in to take the test the last time. They didn't ask her any of that stuff. They asked her the new test, which she studied for. She knew every answer, and she passed it finally. But what an ordeal.
And does that, I've just asked Deborah, does that sound kind of like the stories that you hear?
Yes. When you marry an immigrant, immigration feels that every marriage is fraudulent. And that people are only getting married for a green card. And that's why they wanted to know, are you on the lease? Do you have pictures? Do you joint bank account? Because they use this as a way of looking at whether you are really, truly married. Or is it just to get a green card? There was one couple locally here that the gentleman, and they were an older couple, and the gentleman did not, he didn't take it seriously. And up at the interview, and they asked, well, what are the names of her children? And she had grown children back in the old country. And he says, well, there's one of them. I'm sure there's a Maria. And needless to say, his wife was denied the green card because obviously this wasn't a real marriage. We did affidavits, and we got people to do affidavits. So what you experienced is really common. The test, that's common too, unfortunately. The immigration is just not a friendly, it's not a happy experience. And U.S.-born citizens, they don't understand. You know, they are shocked at what immigration is like because, after all, you're a citizen. But for the immigrant, it's a harsh experience.
And then one thing I would say about when she did get her citizenship, one thing that disappointed me was there's an awful lot of religion in that for a country that's supposed to have freedom of religion and freedom from religion. They put an awful lot of religion in that.
Okay. I will admit I've never been to an oath ceremony. We have them around here. And I've had fellow employees go to the oath ceremony, partly because they've done it themselves. I'm the only U.S.-born person on staff. But other ones have gone because they've been invited to oath ceremonies of clients, the people we've helped study for the test and that. And so I can't say from personal experience what it is like.
everybody always just seems so happy, and we tell them, whatever you do, don't get your passport right away, because if you want to do something else, your certificate is gone for a while it's going in.
That's a question I have. She just applied for a passport because she wants to go back and see her father, who is ailing and old, and I guess she got her citizenship in, I think it's December. Is that going to cause any problem?
No. No. It's the same for her. What they will do, though, is they will take her citizenship, her naturalization certificate, with the application, and it'll go to the Department of State. It will be sent back to her. So that's not a problem, because you have to send the original document. It's just like if you were to apply for a passport, you'd have to send your original birth certificate. It does come back. But the other thing is once that naturalization certificate is gone until it comes back, if she had family members that she was sponsoring, like let's say that she had children back in Mongolia that she was sponsoring, we would have suggested go immediately to your congressman's office, have them make a copy of the naturalization certificate and send it to immigration, because immigration listens more carefully to congressmen than the actual immigrant, and get it switched from the pile of immigrant to the pile of citizen, because it speeds up the process maybe by a few years, and then apply for your passport. So she should get it back probably in 6 weeks or so.
Yeah, they said 1 month.
Yeah. It just depends on how this time of year. It shouldn't be too long. If it was June, it might be longer.
All right. Well, I appreciate the story that the caller had to tell. And we just have about 10, 12 minutes in this part of Focus 580. Deborah Hlavina is our guest. She's the co-director of the East Central Illinois Refugee Mutual Assistance Center in Urbana. Questions about the center, questions about the experiences of people, newcomers, people who come to the community, all of that is certainly welcome. And maybe somebody has a story that they would like to share. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455, email will-talk@illinois.edu. Well, I guess I'm a little bit curious about how you came to be involved in the center. I don't know if there's an interesting story there or not.
Not really. I was working on my doctorate, and I needed a part-time job while I wrote up research. And years before, I had been in the Peace Corps. And so getting around that again, I just loved it. I like the people. I like the immigrants. And plus, too, if you do things like Peace Corps, you're one of those feel like you got to change the world type people type of thing. And I just enjoy it. We can't help everybody. Sometimes we only can give them bad news. But we do such an interesting job and such a diverse job. We do everything from births to, unfortunately, yesterday, one of the bilinguals was helping somebody plan a funeral for a death. So, I mean, we do it from the beginning to the end and everything in between. Sometimes we cannot change things. If you signed a lease and you didn't understand it, you are stuck. But that's the same way for everybody. So, for us, it's making sure that if the people before they sign brings a copy in, and we'll make sure you understand the rules. Then it's your choice, because we can offer you options, but in the end, you have to live with whatever choice you make. So it's just it's an interesting thing.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk with somebody else in This is someone in Champaign, line one. Hello.
Yes. Good morning. I really appreciate your show this morning, and I wanted to let you know that at the very beginning of the show, we got blanked out on some of her introduction because of the National Weather Service test. But I think it's really important that people understand the difference between refugee and immigration, and how difficult it is even to come in as a refugee, and all the hoops and paperwork that they need to go through. And she just mentioned the translation staff, and they are wonderful, having worked with a number of them. But I did want to give her an opportunity to talk about how the center is funded and what their big event is coming up this weekend. And I will get off and listen. Thank you.
All right.
Okay. We are a typical nonprofit. We get our money from a little bit of everywhere. And, of course, there's never enough. We have some funding from the state of Illinois, which has put us, like all the other social service agencies in the state, really behind the eight ball because they are not paying in a timely manner. In fact, the administrator who handles the grant from the state paid us through December out of their own reserves. That will not happen again because they can't do it. So that's one pot. Another one is United Way. We're a United Way-funded agency. City of Urbana gives us a small grant. Champaign County Mental Health Board gives a small grant because part of it is refugees, when they come, they came because bad things happened to them and their family. But they cannot address those things until they've been here a minimum of 5 years because they are too busy surviving. And so many of them might have mental health issues, and we do an education portion on that, making sure that they understand that it is a disease and not other things. Because different cultures view mental health issues differently. So that's one pot. We get some money from churches. We get donations. In fact, we're having a fundraiser this weekend at St. Pat's where we are having ethnic food, entertainment, a silent auction. That's our big fundraiser for the year. And then we do small things as well. If somebody wants to come, we still have tickets available. They're $60. If you go away hungry, it's your own fault. The menu this year is going to be some from Asia, some from Africa. One of the desserts will be out of the Middle East, some from Mexico. So if you go away hungry, and it's your own fault. Mm-hmm. It's a nice, and I know we're going to have the Congolese choir is going to be as part of the entertainment. A drummer who's here at the university is on, a visiting professor. I believe he's out of Ghana. I've never heard him, but people say he's great. So it's all a little bit. We also get a small amount of federal money. I'll get back to where the original question was. Small amount of federal money to work with refugees and doing workshops from Office of Refugee Resettlement. It's handled by Jewish Family and Child Services in Chicago. And it allows us to do workshop on family strengthening, parenting, because everybody who comes to the U.S., the one thing they all hear is you can't hit your children. Now, I don't know how that's really told to them, but then they're afraid to do any kind of discipline to the children. And I actually saw one child once whose mother insisted that she come home, and she went and got her when she was at a neighbor's house. And the kid says, "Your mother is so mean. You ought to call DCFS on her." And you know the child did. And so we were there with DCF explaining the problem and saying the mother didn't do anything wrong. She just went. The girl was supposed to be home at 8. The mother went next door, went down the block and got her and brought her home and humiliated her. Well, a kid that's 14 doesn't want to be humiliated, but that's life. There was no physical violence. There was nothing. But the mother was the one in terror because, you know, they don't understand things like DCFS. So we do parenting and what you can do and how you can talk to your children. And we do what we call smart money. We've got some money to do smart money workshops. Because, again, immigrant families and refugee families have calls on their time and their money from back home. And the people back home don't know how little money they really have. So it's, let's set up a budget. And, yes, maybe you can provide them with $25 a month, and you'll agree to that, and you'll send it every month. But, you know, they were living long before you came to America. You're just helping them a little bit. It's not your responsibility to totally keep them in luxury while you do nothing and work three jobs. And we've seen that happen, too, where one family, they quit working. They had a relative here in the U.S., and they quit working, and they came rather obnoxious. And the poor person here in the U.S. wanted to get married, and you're working three jobs, but he couldn't because he had no money, because it was all going home. So you got to balance it. So we do. It's all a little bit of everything.
I expect that people who come here do have the idea, at least as a long-term goal, that they would like to become citizens, and that they, I'm sure that they think, and in whatever way, however way they define it, they think about becoming Americans. At the same time, I think that also your center, part of the deal is that you do want to try to help people maintain their connections to their culture. It's,
yes.
It's not, you know, becoming and becoming American does not mean that you give up what it was, the cultures and the traditions of the place that you came from.
Yes. We would like, and my personal feeling is I would like you to take the best of American culture, keep the best of your home culture, and have a new one. Because there's a lot good about America. People, if you work hard, you can get ahead. If you didn't have an opportunity to go to school, you can go back to school and get skills and reinvent yourself. Many countries, you can't do that. So that's one of the positives. One of the negatives would be the culture of the street. You don't want that culture. You know, and immigrants don't necessarily understand that. Home cultures, they've got some great things. You know, they've got that respect for the elders, strong family feelings, just like a lot of American homes are extremely family-oriented and they look out for their elders. So you want them to take the best of each of them, decide what it is and what fits with your family values. We take going to church or mosque or temple or wherever for granted. But in a lot of countries, that's not a given. And so that's one of the best. It's the idea that you can sound off with a half-baked idea and nobody's going to knock on your door and you're going to disappear. That happens in other countries. And the refugees have seen it and some of the immigrants have seen it. You know, you talk to them and say, well, the last time I saw my relative, he was walking away with the police, and they never found the body. You know, that's what you want to give up. You want to start getting the feeling that maybe the police will be your friend, and hopefully they won't disappoint you. But people do disappoint people.
Well, that's I think that gets into a whole another area that I'm sure that is difficult, and that is given the experiences that people had with representatives of government and the police in places that they came from. How you know that's going to affect the way that they think about those people here and about how it is that they relate to police officers or how it is that they relate to people in local government, those people who are in positions of authority.
It does. And if I was talking to the policeman, I would say, don't assume that they have done something wrong because they don't look you in the eye. For many cultures outside the U.S., it's respectful not to stare at people. You don't look them in the eye. You're being respectful. They're not hiding anything, Mr. Policeman. They're being respectful. If they really have something that they need to report to the police, we will go with them. No, they got to do the reporting, but we can be there to intervene or give them moral support or explain what they're trying to say. Because people do get nervous. I would get nervous if I was involved with the police. You know, it's not my normal way of reacting to be involved with the police. It's not normal in my family. We don't have much to do with the police. So if I had to do something with the police, I would be nervous. And I would be 10 times nervous if I didn't understand the system, didn't necessarily understand my rights, and didn't speak the language. Or because your language, even though you may have survival English, under times of stress, your language skills fly out the window, and all you can think of is your home language, and you're trying, and it gets worse. So it's you help them.
Yeah, we're down to the point where we have maybe about a minute or so left. I guess I think maybe one of the most interesting projects in all of this that people are involved in is in addition to just trying to take care of basic needs, take care of their family, have a job, think about their educational needs and where they want to go and what they want to do, is the whole project of making a new kind of identity that's something of a combination of what they were and then what they want to be.
That's right. It really is. It's assimilating them. It really is. It's assimilating them into America. And some areas do it very well. I think Champaign-Urbana does it very well. I think some areas of the U.S. probably don't do it as well. But in Champaign-Urbana, even though you may speak a different language, it's not so big that you can ignore learning English. And that's the beginning step of the assimilation process. If you don't feel that you have to learn it and ever have to have it, you don't assimilate as well. But you can count on it, your children will assimilate down the road, and they will move on, and your status may change, and you may find yourself to be much more lonely than is necessary, because the kids do learn English very fast, and it's a hardworking parent that will force them to keep the home language, and it takes an effort on their part. I think it's great that they do, because it opens up job opportunities down the road for the kids.
Sure. If being they're bilingual.
If they're being bilingual or trilingual, it opens up job opportunities.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have to stop. We're here at the end of the time. Again, I wanted to say if people are interested in finding out more about the East Central Illinois Refugee Mutual Assistance Center, they do have a website.
Yes.
So you can look there, and there you can find out some more about their annual fundraising dinner that is coming up this weekend on Saturday. Our guest this morning in this part of Focus, Deb Halovna, she's the co-director of the center. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.